Welcome, Pewter Report readers and listeners, to another edition of the Pewter Nation podcast. I'm talking really fast because this is going to be kind of a shorter edition because we've got to get out of here pretty quick. So we should just talk really fast or talk normal, and then Trevor can kind of just double time.
Speed up
right.
The voice.
Yeah. Speed it up.
Yeah. Oh, that'll be good.
We could do a 40-minute podcast in 20 minutes. I'm Mark Cook along with Scott Reynolds and Trevor Sikkema. We are here from One Buccaneer Place. It is Thursday afternoon, and we just got done with all of the assistant coaches yesterday, which was Wednesday. We had the defensive staff and the special teams coaches today. It was the offensive staff. And
yes.
Scott, what do we want to talk about for you? Let's talk about yesterday real quick with the defensive coaches. What kind of stood out to you two from those coaches?
Branson Buckner did. And our PewterReport.com readers, I don't want to burn them out on this guy yet.
Wow, real original, Scott.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Branson Buckner story.
Yeah, ooh. I know. But I'm
should have wrote one yesterday.
I'm just saying, and I think the beauty of our website and our Twitter followers out there on at Pewter Report, a little shout out to a Twitter crowd, they saw the videos that we shot of Branson Buckner. So it's not just reading what he said in our quotes. It's actually hearing him and seeing the charisma that he has. And that's why have made him the subject of so much of our recent coverage, meaning last week's Fab Five, where there was a couple points about him, and then following up with his interactions with Vita Vea. He really has some big plans for this defense. And I think when you look at this depth chart, when they get the eight guys that they're going to have, and they're going to have to cut a couple of guys that are going to end up on other teams' squads for sure, because there's just a glut of talent now on the defensive line. I think the days of seeing a player like Gerald McCoy play 85% of the snaps is going to be coming to a quick end. You're going to see players, the starters, maybe play 50 to 60% of the snaps. And then the second wave, whoever makes that up or whatever situations they get into, nickel pass rush, short yardage, whatever, the goal is going to be to play all of the guys as much as they deserve the snaps and try to keep the starters, guys like Gerald McCoy, who are used to playing 85% of the snaps and getting beat up throughout the course of a season, keeping guys like him and Jason Pierre-Paul fresher for the fourth quarter and also fresher for later in the season with stronger rotations.
And Buckner said that yesterday. He said, look, imagine playing 70 plays, but then playing 35. How much better and more effective you'll be in those 35 plays.
Well, it's in theory, though, right? Yeah. Like, yeah. I was just about to say there, I'd love to, you know, Buckner is a guy who played plenty in the NFL. He's got plenty of experience doing it. I'd love to hear from a defensive lineman to see, like, hey, I know they get tired out by the fourth quarter, but, like, how much different is 70 snaps to 40 snaps? Like, when you, in theory, it sounds great, right? Mm-hmm. More energy. You put more energy into the 40. But do you really? Like, is that a – like, how much more energy are you putting in? And that's why I say, everybody's got to go full speed every time. And so instead, if you're not, then all of a sudden you're just playing 40 mediocre plays instead of 70.
And maybe by that 65th play – you've figured out this guy. I mean, you've wore him down. You know what I mean? Then you get that sack. I mean, every play is its own individual battle, right?
If you're a defensive lineman, would you rather have it where you're playing the whole game and you get the better of a guy in the fourth quarter or something? I mean, if you're tired, I guess you're tired.
Well, we know a guy like JPP is not going to come off the field.
Right.
Like,
he plays
Branson
so many
Buckner,
snaps.
You know, drags
so
him
what
off
I'm saying,
the field.
You know, like we talk about, having a second wave, maybe. And I don't know, maybe that'll be the thing. Maybe that'll be great.
Yeah.
But I do wonder for guys like JPP who played, what was it, like the second most defensive snaps or something?
I think it was the most. Yeah, it was like in the 90s.
Line snap, whatever. Well, yeah. You know, it was crazy how many snaps that he played. That's a guy who's built his entire career off outlasting what an offensive lineman has in terms of effort.
Right.
And probably, you know, you would hope, in theory, your team's got the lead, you're pinning your ears back, you're going mm-hmm. after the quarterback, and you're getting the better of it that way. So I wonder what the dynamic is there.
And you mentioned JPP, and you look at the hierarchy.
Actually,
okay, you both did.
But me first.
The hierarchy of the salaries, JPP and Gerald McCoy being the two top dogs in terms of making the most money. You know, you want those guys in the field as much as possible, in theory, to earn that money, and also they're your better players, which is why they're paid that. So if you reduce Gerald's snaps, let's say from, you know, if he's playing 60 snaps a game, you know, and you cut him down to 45, what's the mindset going to be on second and 15 when Vita Vea may be in there and doesn't get to the quarterback and they throw a touchdown pass down mm-hmm. the field? Then it's like, well, gee, if Gerald was in there, maybe he gets the pressure or the sack or whatever. And so I just wonder, like, if this is great in theory, but at the end of the day, it's going to be JPP and Gerald are going to get their plays, and then they're going to rotate everybody else.
We'll have to see. And you know what? They talked about this yesterday, and we had a lot of people on Twitter that have been asking us on Twitter in the Monday mailbag, what's this defense going to look like? Mm-hmm. And every coach we talked to yesterday said, we don't really even know yet.
Yeah.
Because they've got to figure out how these guys fit in. Again, right. If this were the exact same group as last year, then you could pretty much decide this is what they're going to do. But they've got to see how these guys interact
with each
other.
I like that answer, because what that tells me is this coaching staff is now committed to doing what your personnel does best and using the personnel that way.
I felt like they said that last year, though.
But they didn't have the horses last year.
Chicken salad out of chicken poop. It's hard to make a good sandwich.
I guess. And we will really see how much of that saying or that excuse, whatever you want to call it, is true this year.
I agree with what you're saying.
Because they said that last year. They're like, oh, you know, that's why we play our safeties fluid, and that's why we do this. You know, we want the best player to be able to play.
But I wondered, and I asked Coach Smith about this, I wondered if by having more talent, does that mean – I mean, because that gives you so many more options, but would it be smarter to simplify things? Because it's just like the Buccaneers, Scott. You talked about this back in the heyday of the Buccaneers. Monty Kiffin didn't rotate defensive linemen for the most part.
No,
you know, he put his four out there.
Right.
And if somebody was dying, he would drag them off for a play. And then,
but Tyoka Jackson would be the guy to go in at three technique, nose tackle, right, or either defensive end. It was basically a five-man defensive line. It was four starters, and then when they needed somebody to go in for an injury or for a breather, it was Tyoka. And that was it.
Yeah.
It was like a short bench, if you will, that he went
to. So if you've got what you feel is four above-average defensive linemen, and I guess it depends on what they feel the drop-off is with that second wave.
And I
if
think
JPP is totally kicking the left tackle's ass,
why are you taking
him off the field?
Yeah, exactly.
And defense, too.
But also, too, I think defensive linemen, you're going to have attrition there, right? I mean, Gerald McCoy missed a game. Clint McDonald's missed a couple games.
Yeah.
You know, he's no longer here. But Noah Spence was out early for the entire year, you know, after the Giants game or Patriots game, whatever it was. So now I think you can weather an injury along that defensive line or two a lot better, because you've got some experienced quality guys in there at all the positions. Nose tackle with Mitch Unrein, Vinny Curry, Will Golston, strong set defensive end, Noah Spence for JPP. Vita Vea is in the mix too. Mm-hmm. There's going to be injuries that are going to happen.
Yeah.
And it used to be, oh my gosh, if Gerald McCoy goes down, that's it for the defensive line.
Right.
And I think this year with a JPP and someone of that stature, that they could weather an injury along that defensive line a heck of a lot better.
Yeah. My biggest takeaway from yesterday, or when the defensive coaches were up there, was, and maybe this shouldn't be exactly a surprise because we often get ahead of ourselves with rookies and certain changes, but Mike Smith basically said Hargraves is a starting outside corner. Did he not? I mean, he said
as of right
in
now,
base
sure.
defense,
yeah,
that job is Hargraves to lose. He's going to play outside in base,
I didn't,
and then he's
going to
play nickel and strong or in sub packages.
I didn't take it that he was necessarily saying he was the guy. He was
saying,
that the guys that were starters, that's
right,
their position
right now.
It's
his job to lose. But yeah, I think the big takeaway from it was we saw Hargraves be much better in the slot, so they're not going into this year thinking Hargraves is our starting slot player. They're
correct,
saying Hargraves is our starting outside corner,
and that's one of the things.
He plays nickel.
That's one of the things
John Hoke said last year.
Yeah, John Hoke said he did a tremendous job playing inside against Buffalo.
He's better at it.
But the next week at Carolina, he did a tremendous job playing outside. Probably his best game playing outside in that game.
They don't have any receivers, though. So, you know, that's my only thing.
They had Russell Shepard, Trevor.
Kelvin Benjamin that game.
You play against you play against better wide receivers, and Hargraves clearly struggles with it. But that was my main takeaway, is that as of right now, the outside job, and I guess, like I said, maybe we shouldn't necessarily be shocked by this, but this is my takeaway. It's his job to lose. They're going to play him as the outside wide or the outside.
You guys already know who I say is the starting cornerback.
Carlton Davis.
He's the starter.
Yeah, and I think that most fans would hope that it's not going to happen by week one.
No,
right?
It may not. But you know what? We would have thought the same thing about Quan Alexander. There's no way this guy's going to be the starting middle linebacker. You know,
especially
what I mean?
After they just signed Bruce Carter.
Davis, here's a question. If Carlton Davis plays well enough, to, let's say midway through
and
the year.
Listen, Trevor, he doesn't have to. There's not a high bar set for him to win a job.
No,
that's right. The sad thing.
So if Carlton Davis plays well enough to earn that starting outside spot, next year, okay, and let's just say that Vernon becomes the nickel, he comes inside. Next year, Brent Grimes is gone.
Right.
Are they drafting a corner again in the first two rounds?
I think that's where you see Carlton maybe go to the left side, because we saw him in the minicamp primarily playing the left side.
Yeah. But I think, too, that – and they're going to – I got it from a pretty good source. They're going to play Carlton on both sides. He's not just the left cornerback. But I think, to your point, Trevor, that's really where MJ Stewart and how he develops. And can he play outside cornerback at this level? I think that this team believes that he at the very worst, he is a very good nickel corner.
Right.
And as Mike Smith confirmed, and it's no big secret, this team was in nickel 65 to 70% of the snaps, and you're certainly going to have that a couple times a year for sure with the likes of Matt Ryan and Drew Brees and even Cam Newton to a degree in this division. So you're going to see plenty of nickel defense.
All right, let's flip over to the offensive side real quick. Today we got Mike Bajakian, we got Todd Monken, Tim Spencer,
Skylar Fulton, the new wide receivers
coach. I just want whatever energy pills that Monken and Fulton take. There must be something in that wide receiver coach's room, but I need some of that juice. Fulton, you told me, get some pictures. If you guys see the pictures we eventually post, most of them are going to be blurry because this man does not
sit still.
He's a mile a minute. Moving.
Yeah.
He's just moving the whole time.
Yeah, he's a blur.
You know what the big takeaway was for me for offense? The quote that Monken had when he talked about 2017, and he said, "We chose to suck."
Yep.
That's right.
Twice.
And
he said it twice.
Right, and he said, "I don't sugarcoat it for my players." And this is exactly what you would want. And I think that it's...
Thanks for spoiling the story that I'm writing.
The dynamic,
right,
sorry. You go read more over at peterreport.com.
Read more.
So... I think the dynamic between journalist and coach is so funny during the season, right? Because there are so many things that are going on that we see, that maybe they see, but they can't say. You know what I'm saying? Like, if they suck, they can't say in November or October, or it just doesn't happen often. A coach won't tell you, "We suck." Yeah, you guys are right. We ask him a question like, "Hey, this guy's struggling. Hey, the offense is struggling." You know, it's usually combated with.
They boost up the confidence,
or even they go the other way. They get a little bit snippy with it. Yeah. They go, "No, we're doing this." Blah, blah,
or
blah.
The coach tries to take all of the deflects all of the criticism to themselves.
Something, and then all of a sudden, here goes the offseason. Monken says, "I don't sugarcoat it with my players. I told them you guys chose to suck, and they suck."
And you know what's funny? It's coaches like Monken that resonate well with the media and the fans, because it's like...
And hopefully with the players.
It's like, that's what we saw.
Right. Like, why would you... You know, it's the same thing when we were watching Buckner, you know, coach Vita Vea.
Yeah.
First day out there in a Bucs helmet, and he's basically saying, like, "I don't care that you were a first-round pick. I'm going to get the most out of you. I don't care about your feelings either. My job is to make you the best football player I can." And sometimes that tells you, hey, you're not doing good enough. And you always want coaches like that. You said that they're good for the media, they're good for the fans, but... Honestly, if you're a good player, it should be good for all players too.
You picked up on something that Buckner said about Gerald McCoy.
Yeah,
that was really interesting.
Yeah, you know, yesterday and again, it was one of those things where you're listening, you do the double take. But you know, he talked about, you know, Gerald, you're 30, you've made a Pro Bowl, and he sat down and watched film with Gerald, and he just said he told him this. You know, you've made the Pro Bowl, you've been successful at your job.
It's not about your physical ability,
but what has it done for the team? What is it? How's that translated into wins for the football team, I think is what he was trying to say. And, you know, he wants Gerald to take a more mental approach. He says, I don't want you to get bigger. Mm-hmm. I don't need you to get stronger. I need you to play up here. And he tapped his head. And he actually did that twice during the press conference yesterday. And, again, we talked, you just mentioned that he's not sugarcoating anything. Well, Monk is not sugarcoating with his players, but Buckner's not either with Vita Vea or even Gerald McCoy.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you guys have noticed, we have not gotten Gerald McCoy at the podium. We've had plenty of media opportunities. Gerald is not talking. I spoke to Gerald at the bowling thing for Donovan Smith a week ago. I asked him jokingly, I said, when are we going to get you on the podium? He said, you're not.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if that's going to stand true through the whole year. I don't think so. Gerald will eventually want to talk because Gerald loves to talk.
I think at this day and age with where he's at in his career, though, he knows at age 30 that he's on the other side of the mountain, right? I mean, he's not climbing up anymore. He's a Pro Bowler. It's kind of downhill.
He's trying to maintain right now as long as he can before the decline happens.
And when I say decline, I don't mean physically. I don't mean to say that he's not going to get 10 sacks this year or he's not making a Pro Bowl. I'm just saying that time is running out. He's at 30. He's on the wrong side of the NFL career. For most players,
right?
You don't see many 38-year-old defensive linemen, right? I mean, I don't think he's got 8 more years left in this game. So I like what Buckner said, and I like the fact, too, that Gerald is not talking. It's time for the action. It's time for all of this to come together. Gerald hasn't made excuses, and that's one thing I really appreciate about him.
Right.
But I think to a man, whether you're a fan, whether you like Gerald or you're not a huge Gerald fan, or the media – he has not had that dynamic defensive end here. I mean, Michael Bennett even was coming up at the same time.
Still wasn't a double-digit sack guy.
Yeah, he has still not figuring out the league.
Right. He has not had a double-digit sack guy.
Right.
And that's – look, there. If Gerald stays healthy for 16 games and this defensive line stays relatively healthy, there's not any more excuses, you know what I mean, I think Gerald can get to that 10-sack plateau.
Yeah.
But let's remember this. This is an interesting stat. You probably still read the same thing I saw on Twitter. The Eagles didn't have a 1,000-yard rusher last year, a 1,000-yard receiver, or a 10-sack guy.
They're a great team.
And they won the Super Bowl.
They're
so,
a great team.
And I think that's what Buckner said yesterday, too.
Didn't care about sacks,
I don't
only
care
wins.
About double-digit sacks. I care about double-digit wins.
Yeah.
And I thought that was good.
Yeah, you mentioned Skylar Fulton. He reminds me, from an energy standpoint, of P.J. Fleck, of Raheem Morris, of these
he's
young,
a very high energy guy.
Yeah, young guys that you gravitate towards, and you know, and one of the things too is he said that he's already been in that room for 2 years, and he appreciates the opportunity of having the confidence and, the faith in him from Dirk Cutter and Todd Monken to take over that room without them having to go outside the building. I love the fact that he pretty much said they made the right choice. I'm the guy.
Yeah.
There's nobody else that they could do a better job than me.
Which is good.
And that's tremendous.
You know, for a guy like Gerald who does get banged up from time to time and has some muscle aches, I mean, if only there was a place in the Bay Area that a guy like that could go.
There actually is, and there's actually a place that has two convenient locations.
Wow.
What?
That's Fitness Tech.
Oh, You've
probably heard me talk about my back issues and trying to get my back corrected. It's something if you are, you know, approaching middle age, if you're middle-aged like myself and Mark, if you are, you know, getting closer to your golden years and you've got some muscle aches and pains, if you've got, you know, a car injury, something that you're trying to recover from.
They're coming, Trevor.
Sports
trust
injury.
Me. 27, you don't know. It's coming.
Trevor has this bewildered look on his face like, what do you mean? you'll get there. Trust me.
Yep.
Fitness Tech is the place to go. Kevin Vada and his staff, they use what are called MAT, M-A-T, muscle activation techniques. You don't notice it, but when you have a muscle ache or a big knot on the right side, it's because it's compensating for muscles that aren't active, that aren't firing on the left side. You've got a body imbalance. And that's one thing that Kevin does is he checks every single muscle fiber in your body. And it's not the quadriceps or the biceps or these big muscle groups, your hamstrings, that typically are the problems. Mm-hmm. These little tiny muscles, like in your rib cage and kind of like over here in the upper portion of your neck, really small muscles that if they're not active, if they're essentially dead and not firing, it's going to cause tension, muscle aches, knots on other parts of your body. And you're going to be spending a fortune trying to figure out, well, I've been to chiropractors, I've been to massage, why isn't this working? Why aren't I getting the relief? It's because you got to work on those other muscles that aren't active. He's going to make them active. Go to fitnesstech.com. It's FITNESS-TEK.com. and you can schedule an appointment, get a consultation with Kevin, and highly recommend him. We have had a couple people in the Pewter Report staff now that use Fitness Tech services, and it certainly is the best way to identify your problems from a muscular standpoint and get you back to being in good health and pain-free.
Very good. And listen, it's vacation season coming up for these football players and for us and different things. Once OTAs and the mandatory minicamp wraps up, you know, I'm going to be going to the beach in June. Got a few days down at Anna Maria Island. Going to spend some time down there. Now, I don't necessarily have a boat, but you know what, Scott? If I did have a boat, I should probably start getting things in order now, right? Any
Absolutely.
Type of marine things. And that's where T.A. Mahoney's, another great sponsor of the Pewter Nation podcast, comes in. If you've got a boat, you're going on vacation, nothing more embarrassing than getting out on the water. Trevor can attest to this from being a Manatee County boy. Nothing worse than getting excited about being out on the water. You get out on the water and all of a sudden the boat doesn't crank.
Wow, or this has happened a lot,
a lot.
I feel offended, actually.
Or you get to the boat ramp, and you go to back in, and all of a sudden a bearing goes bad in your wheel, or a spring goes bad, and you can't load your boat or you can't unload your boat. Now you've got all of these hot college co-eds, right, and all this beer in a cooler, and they are really, really angry. They're not going to get on the boat and go out to the sandbar out at Longboat Pass. So, listen, make sure if you've got a boat, make sure if you have any marine needs, you stop by and see Mike Mahoney and Matt over at T.A. Mahoney's. They are located on Adamo Drive between Tampa and Brandon. They will service all of your marine needs, from fiberglass cloth to baits and tackle to clothing apparel. Anything you need, T.A. Mahoney's can cover it. If they don't have it, stop looking. TAMahoneyCo.com is the place to go. We got to wrap up and get out of here. It's going to be a shorty, but go ahead. A
couple more things.
I
think one of the things that was interesting was Todd Monken basically saying Chris Godwin is
– Yep.
He's there as a starter right now.
He must read the cover three.
That's right. And it's going to be interesting, the dynamic that's going to take place between DeSean Jackson, and we'll see how many OTAs DeSean shows up for. We know Chris Godwin's going to be there. And Chris Godwin is the future. We'll see if he's the present or if it's still DeSean Jackson, but – heard nothing but positive things about Chris Godwin from Skylar Fulton and Todd Monken today. And listening to George Warhop talk about the offensive line, very high in Caleb Beninock and his ability to come in and potentially compete with J.R. Sweezy and maybe get that right guard job. Again, and we heard this last year, George Warhop is the biggest cheerleader for Donovan Smith and believes that he can be a top three offensive tackle. He just got to be more consistent. In some ways, it was kind of like what he said last year. But he said, I wouldn't trade Donovan Smith out for many guys across the league. And he is I think, a huge supporter of Donovan Smith. And I think that Donovan, he's in a contract year right now. We'll
Certainly.
See if he actually gets rewarded before training camp or during training camp, or if this team ends up making him play this fourth year just to see what type of development he has. But he loves having Ryan Jensen in there at the center position, loves the intensity he brings. And one of the things that was interesting was he said the running game was better over the last eight games of the year because they finally got that physical mentality. And I asked him, with guys like J.R. Sweezy and Ali Marpet and DeMar Dotson, who are, you know, guys that are known to be finishers, that have that nastiness, why that wasn't there. He's like, you'd have to ask them.
Hmm. And the crazy thing is this team ran the football better when those three guys got hurt to a degree.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it was a makeshift line at times. Remember that game against the Packers?
Yes.
You know, and a couple other games late in the year because I'm terrible about this. I know DeMar missed time. Did he finish out the season on IR?
Yeah, he did.
And Allie did.
Caleb Beninock was one of the best run blockers last year in terms of grading out. That's
and
why they're so
Sweezy,
excited
we know he ended up on an IR. So, you know, some of the backups came through and actually played better. I mean, it was crazy how that worked. I also think part of that is based on who was behind Jameis Winston that he was handing the ball off to.
No Peyton
Barber was a better running back in 2017 than Doug Martin.
Correct.
For whatever reason, the style of offense they played or the offensive line or the type of play calls, whatever it was, Peyton Barber was the guy. And Todd said that. I think it was Todd or maybe it was Bajakian said it today. Peyton is a guy that turns a 2 yard into a 4 yard,
right,
a four into
right.
a six, a six into
something
an eight.
Something else that Bajakian said that I thought was interesting was they talked about the red zone struggles, and he's like, you know, we watch – film of the best red zone teams in the NFL. That's what we do in the offseason. We try to see what they're doing. And he's like, I went into it thinking, oh, I'd see this new play and this new wrinkle and stuff that I'd be able to implement. And he's like, they're running the same plays that we were.
Yeah. They're just pitching and catching.
Yeah,
better.
We can't execute. Yeah. Like, you know, it was just going out and doing your job.
It was 5 touchdowns, and I'm writing the story right now. It'll be up later on PeterReport.com. But 5 more touchdowns in the red zone. They would have jumped from 24th to the 8th team.
Yeah.
And then you have to wonder, if you do that in red zone touchdown efficiency, then you wonder, how many more football games does this team win?
Oh, that's what I immediately, because he's talking about being top 8.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they win at least 8 games if they score 5 more touchdowns.
Because you think about how many one-score games this team lost.
Yeah.
So.
Well, there's 3 games down the stretch. The Falcons, Lions, Panthers games were all decided by 3 points.
Yeah, Packers game, that was a touchdown in overtime. That was 6 points.
Right, so if you get a touchdown, which is 4 more points than a field goal, then you win all 3 of those games.
And not only that, we saw this team, Scott, not only bogged down in the red zone, have to attempt a field goal. They also had turnovers,
and missed field goals, especially early in the season.
So we always say, well, you trade 7 for 3. Not necessarily. Sometimes you trade 7 for 0.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
And then they become 14-point swings the other way if the team takes the ball, goes all the way down and score. So
Tim Spencer, the running backs coach, really likes the speed.
Do you say running backs coach or running back coach? Because is Mike Bajakian the quarterbacks coach or quarterback?
Coach.
But there's no apostrophe.
It's just quarterbacks.
Okay.
That's the position.
I'm glad I asked that because I'm actually putting that in the story right now.
Yeah, it's running backs coach because there's more than one running back.
He's the quarterback coach, but you're right. Okay.
He likes what Peyton Barber brings to the table, but the speed that Ronald Jones, and he also mentioned Sean Wilson too, the Duke kid, as a third down back. I would not necessarily rule him out.
The Duke kid will trip you, though. Trevor will get
that
reference.
That was the point guard. Duke.
Yeah, different guy.
Oh,
my
Grace
bad.
Nowen.
Yeah,
sorry.
Grace Nowen. Okay. Yeah.
You said Trevor will get that. And I'm like, I don't get that.
Wow. I got one over Trevor's man.
I mean, I know what you're talking about. I just didn't get the reference.
Sean Wilson, he might have a legitimate shot at the third down.
I think he's
running
the
back
team.
Spot.
He's making the team better. I know. You're telling me he's going to. Everybody we've talked to, they've continually.
No,
Jason
he's
Light,
making the team. He's making the team.
Bajakian and Monken said they're really glad to have Charles Sims back.
I understand.
And we know Dirk Cutter. Love Simpson. Charles
That's right.
Sims.
I'm just saying,
too.
Don't
I'm a big,
rule
I'm a,
out Sean
I'm
Wilson.
I'm the biggest proponent of Charles Sims amongst our three, for sure. Because
oh,
I was the
course.
Only one that had him in the battle plan.
I know.
He signed for $950,000.
You're hanging your hat on that forever.
I mean, I got to, because my 12-4 didn't exactly pan out last year.
One last thing I think about the offense. Justin Watson made a very good impression at the rookie minicamp, and I think they're very excited about the skill set he has. Big, strong, fast, tough. All of those are ingredients they want in a wide
receiver. Played for a powerhouse?
Not really. More of like an Ivy League powerhouse, maybe, I guess. Yeah. I don't know what Penn's
mediocre.
Intellectual powerhouse.
Yes.
Well, yeah. I mean, if they were doing a brain bowl, he should win. But I mean, imagine him, Cameron
Brady,
and Jeopardy. Ryan Howard.
Yeah.
I want to see those
I
three.
I
want
to see that Jeopardy right there.
For, yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah.
But Ryan
Howard, the Philly's first baseman. Yeah. Sorry.
O.J. Howard.
Yeah.
I'm surprised you knew the name Ryan Howard.
You
were like, yeah, Ryan Howard.
I thought you said Ron
baseman.
Howard.
Like, wow.
Well, that too.
The follically challenged director, former Happy Day star.
Former Opie on Andy Griffith.
There you go.
By the way, you can't go wrong with the Andy Griffith Show. I've been watching it on the MeTV. It's just
I'm looking
God,
at Trevor. I said the word follically challenged. Trevor, you're 27.
Mm-hmm.
Any balding in your family at all?
What do you think?
I don't know. I'm just asking.
No,
he's a Viking.
Okay, that's good.
Vikings don't get bald. Imagine if like you back in the Viking days, if a Viking actually got bald, I bet he was shunned and never got laid.
Don't you watch Viking? Still has hair.
Don't you watch Viking films? They always have like the bald guy with like the big battle axe, or whatever. He's got like the little monk haircut going on where it's around the sides.
Although the guy that plays the Viking at the Minnesota Vikings stadium, isn't he kind of doesn't he have like a bald spot there?
I know. So,
but I'm thinking like the badass Vikings. If you lost your hair, you probably it was kind of like Samson.
I'm
you
just
lost
saying,
your power.
It's like you know, you are the man bun, right? Like that.
It's
like
true.
That's part of your identity.
It's true.
I'm just saying, 10 years from now, boy, if you were starting to lose that hair,
then I'm going to stop sports writing.
It would be awesome. Because
it's not going to be worth it.
Well, then just go with the back mullet.
It's going to be like Samson. I don't have any hair. My power's gone.
No, keep the back going. The back will always be there. Just you know, have the bald chrome dome,
right.
and then the mullet in the back.
Yeah, that sounds.
Maybe he could just like rat tail it, like
yes,
the kids did back in the '80s.
That's right.
You're only nodding your head because you had one.
Yeah. I only had one for about 2 weeks till my dad snuck up behind me one day with his pocket knife. And
I used to do that. I think I told you at the rookie minicamp.
I don't know that we used to go to the arcades. You're admitting that you create.
I was helping parents out. Is what I was doing. You would have a kid. He was
essentially
like
it was
on level 17 Galaga.
Assault and battery is what you committed.
No, not really. It was, it was more like
you could have went to jail.
I was practicing haircutting. You have a kid level 17 at Dig Dug or Galaga, whatever, back in the day. And you knew...
Dig Dug, shout out Stranger Things.
There you go. You knew that
just started that,
he
yesterday, by the way.
Stranger Things?
Watch the first episode.
It's good.
Stranger Things is one of my favorite shows.
When does it really kick ass, though? I mean, I'm in the first episode.
It's coming.
Sure.
A couple
episodes.
There's
two seasons.
Yeah.
And they're both absolutely incredible.
Phenomenal. Yeah.
You have to
highly
watch the first three episodes.
Okay.
And then at the end of the third episode of the first season of Stranger Things, you go, this is unbelievable.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then you're immediately just going to start watching the second
season. You told me that exact same thing.
It's
cheer, yeah.
Because
I'm
that's
all
how
in.
It goes. Because you think you know the story, and then
and
it just completely flips you on your head.
I mean, yeah. I watched the first episode last night. We watched it. Started the second one.
Nope.
It's getting kind of late.
It's after the third
one,
right?
All right. So yeah.
What do you think it's about right now?
I don't have a clue.
That's good.
I mean, I've tried to figure it out. Some government conspiracy,
do you know
some
anything
aliens.
About the show?
Nothing.
Okay.
Great.
Other than it's set in the 80s, yes.
Right.
It's
which
cool
is awesome.
To me.
It's a very, very cool premise.
All right. Stranger Things is one of my favorite shows that I've ever watched, and I'm so stoked for the third season. So I'm excited.
When is the third season coming?
They're filming it now.
Right now,
so
yeah.
it comes
in the
out.
Fall?
The seasons come out right around Halloween.
Yeah.
Okay.
Every single year. So.
All right.
So going back to the 80s, when the kids were locked into the video games, right, and they could not move because they were getting ready to get that high
mm-hmm.
score, and they had the rat tail, you know, back in the day, you just walked up right behind them with a pair of scissors and snip.
Dude.
And the kid freaks out, but he can't move. He can't do anything about it because the minute he does,
knows his hair is gone, but the high score is more important.
I know. And I would do that, and of course I was being a bit of a punk about it, but all
you
the parents
being a punk?
All of the parents that when little Johnny would get home and not have the rat tail, they'd be like, "Oh my gosh. You know, I want to find that kid and just thank him."
My dad would have loved for
child.
You to have done that. He would have saved him having to resharpen his pocket knife after
you
he sawed mine off. But anyway, but by God, he didn't touch my Def Leppard t-shirt with my puffy name on the back with the vinyl letters. All right, we got to get out of here. We appreciate everybody listening to this edition of the Peter Nation Podcast. For Trevor Sikkema and Scott Reynolds, I am Mark Cook saying we will see you next week for another edition of the Peter Nation Podcast.
Out.
Out. Hey.